Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
We are we doing, is this the fake accent podcast again, Governor?
I think that would be fun. I think that'd be great.
I think people would just delete the podcast, step on their phone, throw it in the garbage, throw the garbage can in a lake.
I think we'd get through 10 minutes. I think people could stand 10 minutes. Because
yeah,
then we'd
know.
Run out of things outside of mate and governor. Governor.
It depends on if we have to stick with one accent or if we can just keep shifting accents.
It's true, right?
Right. So it's just, I don't understand this fancy television. You know, I could do that like for days. I could be a prospector. Nothing wrong with that. I can do that in my
the
sleep.
The Prospector podcast is very low on my choice of conceits.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, it's higher on mine. But yeah, that's when people delete the podcast, destroy their phone, burn it, put it in a garbage can, put the garbage can in a lake, fill the lake in.
Cement it over.
Do a layer of concrete on top. And then maybe they think about getting another phone, but maybe not.
And then we never mention it again.
Never, ever. But hey, we are releasing this simultaneously worldwide. It's Friday. As always, when we talk, Australians will think of this day as Saturday.
Yeah.
But that's their problem.
Also known in Drop Bear Country as Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. It's the telechat device. They have to rename it.
Telechat device podcast.
Hey, so the thing that I really wanted to talk to you about this week is this Critics Notebook you wrote, which was a lot of fun to read, and people should go read it. There'll be a link in the show notes. But, you know, this is like a core existential issue for television right now, which is the headline is How to Enjoy the Platinum Age of Television Without Going Broke. But, you know, your point in it seems to be that there's so much choice now and the imperative to watch something immediately is becoming weaker and weaker unless you're a sports fan, that if you wanted to save money and still have nearly endless flood of good content, you could just cut the cord and subscribe to a handful of services and be just fine.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, as I note in that column, I get asked that a lot. And I did this recently with somebody.
Right. You're a TV critic, right? So people are going to come up to you and say, what do I talk to Tim about? Either because they need help or because they want like a subject they can talk to you about. And it seems to be that what they say is, what show should I watch? What are the five shows I should watch?
Right. Right. And then that has morphed. There's still always that. What should I be watching? And that's so much harder now with so many shows. It's like, where do I start? So as I note in the thing, I just sort of was like, let me just send you a link or text you a link to my column where there was 48 one year and 36 the next. But now people are like saying, man, I'm overwhelmed and I'm paying too much for this. Well, how do I cut my cable bill? Or how do I I've heard about skinny bundles. How do I do that? And so this column was basically about that because I do get asked that. And I just worked this out with somebody. And it felt kind of devious in some way. I was like, ooh, I like this idea. Because, you know, at some point, maybe I'll do this. And I noted that if I wasn't a TV critic, I would completely give up my cable/satellite package. Like, first thing. Literally cut that thing the first way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, sports is a reason maybe you keep it, although there are, depending on what city you're in, and there are different packages that have different deals with regional sports networks. So I'll point out for like Bay Area people this year, you could actually sign up for the new Google TV product and get Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area, which means you get the Giants and the A's, and you get the local channel, so you get the NFL. And it's all in that package, and that's a skinny bundle, and then you're off of the big TV bundle. And that was, I always thought that was going to be like the last line of defense was live sports, but it's already cracked where there are, you know, it's not like $10 a month. It's you got to pay for their bundle, but you get access to all of that stuff as a part of it. So even on sports, the dam is bursting, it seems.
Wow. So I actually had not seen that yet.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. So are you going to do that or do you have it or?
I'm not, you know, I'm actually really, we talked about this a little bit on my tech podcast Upgrade the other week, but I'm, I'm not going to be a cord cutter only because I'm really happy where I am right now, which is I've got my TiVo, you know, my TiVo Romeo, and it's got a huge hard drive and it lets me watch streaming and then it records everything that's coming in via traditional channels and then I can time shift it and it's got a good app. And so for me, I look at that and think, breaking back to one of the problems is that although Google says they've got a cloud DVR, but you know, I am not convinced that any of these things is not going to just be a fractured set of services, some of which are going to force commercials on me when I don't want them, some of which are going to have no way to do kind of traditional DVR kind of stuff. And so I'm skeptical, but I could see a time when everybody, you know, obviously there's going to be a time when what you get on IP television, internet television, is going to be not appreciably different from having a DVR attached to a cable. Like, it'll be literally the same. And at that point, the distinction kind of goes away of, like, then it's just a technical distinction of how your TV got delivered. And it's all going to be about, like, does the business model change in that circumstance, right? Are you paying less? Are you paying the same? Are you able to have a little more choice? But, you know, the option here, if you're somebody who doesn't care about sports, is what you say in the column, which is you could just buy a couple of services and be done. You know, you could do HBO Now and Netflix and walk away.
Yeah, and it's I think the point of this was, you know, that you're a lot of people, you know, it's funny. It's like you're trying to save money, but you have the ability to spend money. Otherwise, your cable bill wouldn't be $150 to $180, which it is for a lot of people. But I think that at some point, no matter what your financial situation is, you want to save money somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think people, when they look at that, and I didn't spend as much time as I wanted at the end of the column where I talked about inertia, which I think is really a powerful thing where people right. want to make change and then they just don't do it because it seems like it's such a big hassle.
It's just what I just said, right? Which right, is, I got a good setup right now. And right. so, and I try to picture what the new setup would be. And it's like, I don't think that would be better. And even if it was the same, the inertia is going to win for at least, you know, there has to be enough of an imbalance in money or convenience to make you move.
Yeah, and I know that the feedback I got like immediately yesterday were people who said if I could get a sports package I would quit. So it's really interesting if this Google thing could work out.
Google TV has that deal, which is with, you know, that's a Comcast channel. So
right.
Comcast is getting money from Google, but it's also, and it's probably providing the internet for most of the people who are using that service. But still, that's Comcast's bulwark against infiltration of IP TV services, just kind of like they're giving it up. They're like, sure, yeah, you can pay for YouTube TV and get the giants, which is just
that's amazing.
But it's all kind of a mess, right? I mean, what people dream about is saying, okay, here's what I want, here are my shows and here's my sports team. Mm-hmm. What do I pay?
Right.
And being told, you know, you like put it together in the little cash register and go ding, that's $20 a month. And the reality is it's like, well, okay, you like these shows, these are on this package, these shows are not, so you're going to need this other package or buy those a la carte. And then the giants, you know, that's in this thing where you can pay this package and work it all up. And it's like, oh, you saved $5 a month over traditional cable and you lost this other channel that some of the year has something that you're sort of interested on. Yeah. And that's when you walk away and you're like, forget it. Just forget it. And that's the challenge with this stuff right now.
Well, I think, and I did get at that in that column, and that's the big bulk of the column, not the inertia, which I think is real. But if you can save money, and you certainly can, you know, I would definitely do it because, yeah, it's easy to get hung up on what is the part that stalls us. What's the inertia? What's the roadblock? And for a lot of people, the roadblock is sports channels. Some people, it's like you said, I kind of want this and I kind of want that, and doesn't that just spread me out and save me $5, which wouldn't be worth it. I actually went through and you could make the example that people could really, really cut their bill like significantly. Like for starters, I trimmed it all. I gave all a bigger picture of it and then trimmed it down. And because we talk about this on this podcast, like what are your favorite channels? And then, you know, barring that, you know, what can you not give up? And like when I said, what are your favorite channels? I was like, okay, HBO, FX, Netflix, Hulu, PBS, Amazon. Those are the ones that where I have most of my stuff on. But if I had to get it down to what I needed most for what I watched, I think I picked HBO, Netflix, and Hulu just because between Netflix and Hulu, you get a lot of like a lot of FX stuff. You get a lot of deep background HBO stuff.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Like, I was just watching The Good Place on Hulu the other day, right?
Yeah, and it's like I've written extensively how I think FX is by far the best curated cable channel. So you don't want to lose that one, and they're included in most of the basic cable stuff that you can get. But again, you get most of the FX stuff on Hulu, and you can get some of it also on if you get Amazon.
Right, because people don't know, I'm sure our listeners do, but a lot of people I think have Amazon Prime and don't even think about the fact that Amazon has built its own Netflix inside of Amazon Prime, and they get it. You just get it for free.
I'm still astounded by the number of people who don't understand that. I think that onus is on Amazon. It's really
totally
stunning. It's like, I to this day, it's 2017, and I feel like you and I on this podcast, and certainly me in print and elsewhere, Twitter or whatever, have said like, hey, people, if you're getting, you know, Amazon Prime because you want packages delivered within 2 days, you also get this amazing Netflix-like library.
And I think they're getting better at it. Like, one example is it used to be when I tried to use Amazon Prime Video, like they conflated their a la carte, which is like iTunes, with the Prime stuff. So it's basically like this is a shop. This is a store where you can buy movies and TV, but some of them don't have a price for Prime members. Right. And I get technically why they did it that way, but like, I don't want to buy stuff. I want to see if I can get it for free from you, or I'll look somewhere else and see if it's on Netflix for free. I'm not going to buy it from you if it's on Netflix for free. Mm-hmm. And in the last year, it seems like they've really changed it where the interface now, you know, there is a Prime Video tab or filter, and you know, and at that point you're inside Netflix basically, and it's just the stuff that's available on Prime Video, and so that has helped them a lot, because initially like you would have to really work to find the Prime stuff, and they've gotten better at that. They're still not on like Apple TV, but they're on all of the all the mobile platforms, and it works in browsers and all of that, and so you know they're getting there, but it's there's this perception. You know, that's the challenge of building an all-in-one product like Amazon Prime, is like, if you buy it for X and it does Y, you may never even know that the Y exists, because you're like, hey, today, it's great. And then I also pay for Netflix. And, you know, that's unless you hear about Transparent or something and realize that you can watch that. And you may even not realize, you hear it's on Amazon, and you're like, oh, I maybe I should look at that sometime, and not realize like, no, you get that for free. You're already on.
Yeah, and I think that people, part of that reason that exists, when I think about it, I think it's that people compartmentalize their purchases. And so, like, for entertainment, it's their cable bill, right? For lack of a better word for it, or if it's satellite or whatever. But it's still your cable bill. It's where you watch TV.
Yeah.
And some people say, look, I buy Prime because I do a lot of shopping at Amazon, and it more than pays for itself in the shipping fees over the course of a year that I would have spent. And so they're not thinking of Amazon as a place that's like Netflix. They're thinking of it as a shopping thing. And so they compartmentalize their spending. And I think for a lot of people, it feels like a bonus when you point that out to them. And because when I write about this, I'm always saying, if you have the money, if you have the extra money, you can add in Amazon, because I think Amazon offers a lot of stuff in their Prime. But then I always say, okay, and also maybe you think you don't have the money, but maybe you're already spending it on that part. So there's that. But yeah, it was fun to go through, and I got lots of feedback. And in fact, I heard from the Amazon people who said, hey, which is interesting. And again, it probably goes back to like, oh, you don't really tout this very much. So that's one reason I didn't know about it. But they said, hey, we have this thing called, they call it channels, where you go into the service, and then from the Amazon platform, you can sign up for other channels.
Oh,
other
channels. They do, like, they've got like Showtime and Stars, I think, I want to say. I don't know if you can do HBO, but yeah, Amazon is like reselling cable channel packages,
right? And
inside.
I remember that they started with Showtime, I believe. And Showtime has benefited on the side, by the way, for all these little side deals. They're doing really well with getting their stuff out there rather than just their traditional cable subscription, where you're like, hey, buy HBO and Showtime and add on, you know, $40. They're doing much better, I think, these days through, they're not giving their numbers out, but they're doing much better out through the over-the-top type services. But according to the Amazon people, it's not just that anymore. It's not just that, you know, Showtime and Apple, but like a whole bunch of channels, like apparently hundreds. And I was like, well, I did not know about that. And this wasn't to be all-inclusive. It was to talk about the issue in general. It wasn't supposed to technically be about me fixing everybody's cable bill and skinny bundle and showing them this the 5,000 ways that they can do it. It was really just to talk about the idea.
Yeah, so among the channels that you get on Amazon, HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, Stars, CISO, Comedy Central stand-up, there are a bunch. And the idea here is that these are not part of Prime. You in addition, you pay for HBO, and then it just comes in the same interface, but you don't get access to that stuff unless you pay. So instead of paying separately for like the Showtime over the top service and the HBO over the top service, you just can buy them inside Amazon, and then it's just a matter of like, are they cheaper that way? Is it easier that way? But that's an interesting approach, right? Because Amazon's just saying, look, we're not just Netflix. We're also going to bundle in everybody's over the top services, and that's pretty cool, right? I mean, that's getting it back to being Amazon basically saying, we are your one-stop shop. You can pick what channels you want. Like, they're not going to be a bundle, but they're going to pick these services you want plus all of our stuff. That's, you know, Netflix is not doing that.
Right. And that, I think that goes back to the inertia part of it. And if people are already familiar with, like, say, using the Apple or using Roku, the inertia of it is like we just talked about, like, what app or what entity could just say, okay, you wanted to, what you like, here's your sports team, here's your five best shows, here's what's the combination of that? I think that's what, I guess, Amazon is trying to do in that is like, we have it all here in a one-stop shop. You can just sling it, or you can, I'm sorry, it's not sling, obviously, but I wanted to say sling it over, and I'm like, oh, that's actually another product. No, that's not the right word for it. But, you know, you could have Roku and stream it over and then get access to all those. So it's doable.
I do wonder, I mean, I start to think about the opportunities for companies and websites to do things like, whether it's a hardware interface like Roku or Apple TV, or whether it's, or Amazon's, you know, they've got their own hardware, or if it's a, like a web service or an app, like we've talked about Fan TV. But the problem now is it's so confusing that somebody needs to compile the information and say, hey, what are your favorite shows or channels? And then show you, like, here are the ways you can buy packages to reach all of the stuff you like, and look at the prices and make a decision about which set you want, right? But that doesn't exist right now. Everybody sort of, as far as I know, has to still do that for themselves. But imagine being able to say, here are the shows that are on right now that I like. Tell me how I could cut the cord and get that. And imagine if you could do that inside your Apple TV, and then just sign up and say, sign me up for those three services and I'm done, or your Roku box or your Amazon box.
I think that's what it's going to take for mass involvement, is literally being inside something that, well, I mean, there's steps, obviously. There's still tons of people who don't know what Apple TV is. There's tons of people who don't know Roku or Chromecast, or they're not streaming stuff from the internet onto their TV. I know that seems weird in this time, but there's millions of people who don't do that and don't know how to do that. And you tell them that this has been around for a long time, they just are like, what? So once they get over that initial layer, most of us already are. I wouldn't call us early adopters. This is very late in the process for streaming. But once you get that hurdle, yes, the next thing is, give me a box where I can just use my remote and go click, 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 and then I get them and you bill me. That's literally what people want.
So here's just a wild idea. Why could that not be your quote-unquote cable box, right? Why would that not? Why would Comcast not build or license something that's an IP box instead of a traditional cable box and say, here? Because you know, they would probably get a cut of it, and you're paying them for the internet. And I don't know. I mean, in the end, my watchword, I've said it on this show a bunch of times, I've said it on other podcasts too, is like, the TV people want their money. They're going to get their money from you. You're not going to get something for nothing. They may compete more. We may end up in a world where you have to choose, you know, how much do I like this show? Like HBO subscribers have done all along. It's like, you want to watch Game of Thrones, you got to sign up for HBO. You got to pay extra, at least when it's on the air, and then maybe you drop it. I mean, every show, every service is going to be like that in the future. But, you know, in the end, that might be good. Some people are going to say, I don't even want to bother. Just sign me up for everything. And other people are going to be like super tactical. Like, this month I'm going to have Netflix, but next month I'm going to move it over to HBO. And that's fine too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, people who are better at logistics and crossing off lists and creating lists, that will probably be that tactical. Yeah. I think that
coupon clippers
are people who have a lot of alerts on their phone to switch things, and like, now's the time to drop that credit card because it's the 3-month trial's over or whatever. But I think that as I write in this column that I did, this critic's notebook, it's totally doable. And people can save tons of money. And going back to the original thing that we started talking about, which was, you know, if you take sports out of it, because when we add that in, we get into this conversation of like, okay, how do you get around the inertia and how do you get through the confusing part? It's actually really not confusing, the bulk of this column, which is, you're paying between $150 and $180 a month. You don't want to do that anymore. And this is circling back to what you were saying. It's like, okay, well, there's so much content because of the platinum age of television that's already on the shelves. It's already done. It's been done. You know, six seasons of The Sopranos, 5 seasons of Breaking Bad, 7 seasons of Mad Men, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of people haven't seen any of that stuff, much less Buffy and The Shield and Battlestar Galactica and anything you can mention. And certainly people are not completists on some of the things that they might have started. You know, there's people who say, oh, I love South Park, but I haven't watched it in 4 years. Well, there's a lot of South Parks left to catch up on, and you can do that. And the easy way to do that is to cut your cable bill and just get something simple. Say, I'm just going to do Netflix and I'm just going to do Hulu. I think you can completely live on that. Although, yep, I think it's better to also get the HBO. What is it, Now? If you're not a subscriber, HBO Now.
Over the top, it's HBO Now, right?
Yeah. So over the top, I would do HBO Now, Netflix and Hulu. And I think you're so covered at that point. You could even drop one of them because there's so much that you could watch that you'd be months before you needed to actually switch over.
And that's what, $30 a month, $35 a month?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, I mean, if you just did, I don't know how much Now is because I have Go. So what do you think Now is?
I think it's like $15 a month, but I'm going to check.
$7.99 for Netflix. And I, of course, hate commercials. So I pay the $11.99 for Hulu.
Yeah, me too. And it is $15 for HBO Now.
Yeah, so that's all of that's very doable. So that's
if you just $35 a month for those three content streams.
That is a lot. I mean, that's not a lot of money, especially if you're spending $180. And as I point out, one of the new options that is being tried out is this DirecTV Now, where they have their own. It's just a streaming thing. It's not even a satellite.
And that's the same as the same sort of thing as the Sling service and the new, when it comes out, it's just been announced, the YouTube TV feature that Google's doing.
Exactly. And so you have, you know, they have a $35 tier with 60 plus channels.
Yeah.
And then a $50 tier with 80 plus channels. But to me, what I was trying to hint at in that paragraph when I was writing that in that story is like, I think people also want to, it's not just money, it's they want to declutter their choices because, oh my God, this is like, and as I note in here, the 500 channel universe is the most wrong-headed thing. No one really wants that. That I know anymore. I only want the channels I watch. So when I look at this thing, I don't want 80 channels.
I don't even want the channels I want to watch. I just want the shows I want to watch,
you've really stripped it down to a minimalist kind of thing. But yeah, I looked at this and I was like, maybe I could stomach 60 channels, but I don't need 60 channels. And I definitely don't want to pay another $15 to get 80 channels.
Right.
It's too much. It's overkill.
All right, let me take a break and tell people about one of our sponsors for this episode. Yeah, that's right. If you love books but you find you never have time to read them, you might want to try Audible. If you haven't heard about Audible, I don't know where you've been, but Audible lets you have audiobooks that you can listen to wherever you are. It works on your iPhone or your iPad or your Android phone. It works on your computer. It works on your Kindle Fire. It works on any MP3 player. You own the books. This is not a rental like a Netflix situation. You own the books. You can listen to them anytime. If you decide that you're not feeling it with a book, you can actually just return it and exchange it for another book, and there's no questions asked, and you can do that anytime. If you're a fan of television and listening to this show, I'll point out, if you want to get caught up on Game of Thrones, those books are great on audio. If you want to listen to a book about television, I enjoy TV the Book by Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Seitz. That's a fun book, and it's available on audio, read by the authors, which I think is actually a lot of fun.
Well, less fun for me because I know them.
Because
yes,
you know them,
no,
yes.
I love those
Or
clowns, yeah.
for you, Tim, you can read Sepinwall's first book, The Revolution Was Televised, which has a professional narrator. So if you want to go that way with a more professional narration.
Yeah, so there we
that's
go.
You can listen to it and experience it if somebody hasn't read those. Those are fun books. So just picking some TV-themed books. You got to commute, you know, the traffic is slow, but you can open your mind and hear some great stuff. If you're, I do a lot of stuff with audio in the kitchen because it's great when I'm doing the drudgery of cooking or cleaning the dishes or emptying the dishwasher. I put in my earbuds and spend time with audio. So there are a lot of great places you can use this stuff. So you can't make more time in your life, but you can make more of the time that you've got by putting something in your ears and then feeding on this great book content that is going to make your commute or your chores or your walk or whatever fly by. So set up yourself with a free trial at Audible. Go to audible.com/TV Talk to start now. And thank you, Audible, for sponsoring TV Talk Machine. Look at us with our
Look
sponsor.
And I think that's very clever of you to say Game of Thrones, because I think that's a great, that would be a great use of Audible. I mean, that's like,
those books are good as audiobooks. They're really good.
Yeah. And I just, that's what I needed to hear, because that's probably the way that I would go through the books.
Yeah. Well, that's what my wife did, is she did them all on audio and had a very different experience than I did, because audiobooks are a different kind of experience, but they can be, she would never have read them, but she listened to all of them and it was pretty great. So I, one other question about your report, your critic's notebook, is, what does this do for the TV business? What's the other side of this? Because you talk a little bit about how, you know, the Live Plus 3, Live Plus 7, Live Plus 30, these are the like ratings metrics that traditional TV has now in terms of how many people are watching this in the first day or the first 3 days or whatever. But, you know, is this, how do they approach this world? Do they just kind of like pretend that nothing has changed, even as their distribution medium just fractures around them? And is that what they're doing now, is just sort of like whistling past the graveyard?
I think they did that for a very long time. I don't think they're doing it now. Everybody's a little bit slower on the uptake than the next person. But I think the industry as a whole kind of realizes that. And the one thing I will credit them for, and that's above my pay grade, is they've all had to scramble and find out, how do we make money with less eyeballs via Nielsen and not watching, you know, in the first, you know, Live Plus, you know, same day. So
right.
then, okay, Live Plus 3. And then, you know, so it's the 72 and a half, 75 hour window, and Live Plus 7 in a week. And how do we still make money on that? And then as that tail gets longer, how do we convince advertisers that that's not a scary or bad thing, and that people will get to it? And maybe they have to change how they do their advertising. They can't say, hey, this movie comes out on Thursday, well, or Friday. That doesn't work if you're watching it 14 days later. So they have to, they've done a pretty good job of addressing that. They've done a very good job on the business end of like learning how, we just talked about this over the top stuff, learning how to sell it back to either Netflix or Amazon, learning how to profit from the shows that they own. Of course, the ones that they don't own, that's much more problematic. But learning how to profit on their library, I should say, they're better at that. But yeah, I mean, the people are hard at work trying to do this, because what's going to happen, and I think this goes a little bit back to the inertia part, I think the big hit is going to come at cable, and it's going to come at satellite. Of course, those are one and the same now if you look at Comcast, since the Comcast bought DirecTV. But that's the big hit, because once people realize that they're finally sick of paying $150 or $180 for their cable bill, they're going to kill it, because you have the content now to not feel like you're losing anything. And the whole gist of this column is, like, I said, the very first thing I ask people is, how relevant do you want to be? If you need to be relevant, if you need to talk about Game of Thrones the week, or Legion, or whatever it comes out, the day that it happens, or the day after, this is not for you. If you do not care about that, and you care about the money, then you can cut everything and get down to the $35. We just managed to give people three amazing channels with hundreds of great shows for $35. When people realize that, and that they can do it, and it's easy, they will do it. And the damage is going to be to the cable industry and to the satellite industry. And the cable industry is already reeling, right? Because there's winnowing, and I joked about how I'd written about that, more than a year ago. But yeah, that's the business model impact is going to hit hardest on cable, because people don't need it. They just don't need it. There's too many good shows.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, update. It's AT&T bought DirecTV, not Comcast. Right. But still, it's all that consolidation, and now they've got a stream. And Comcast, which can't provide fast internet, broadband internet, because it's a satellite provider, their internet is kind of slow and laggy. Now there's a DirecTV branded, like you said earlier, streaming service, which is totally different. I keep thinking, when I come back to everybody's going to want to get their money, is at the time when everybody cancels their TV subscriptions, well, what's going to happen is that they've got bandwidth caps on their internet plans, and they're streaming HD video, and they're going to basically, Comcast is going to say, all right, you can just do internet only, and then they're going to crank up the cost of the internet at that point, because that's how they're going to have to make their money. And I mean, right? I mean, because in the end, they're going to try to make their money however they can.
Well, that is a very sinister depiction of the future, my friend. bandwidth caps.
Well, I do. I have a 1 terabyte cap on my internet now. Actually, I don't. I'm now paying $50 more a month so that I have unlimited data, and that's a way for Comcast to make money from me from streaming all these things that I stream. And that's just, you know, that's going to be, you know, how will Comcast make it if they're not charging people for TV anymore? And the answer is, they're still going to be you're cutting the cord, but you're actually not cutting the cable from Comcast, because you need it for internet if you're in their area. And they're still going to make their money from you. They're going to find a way one way or another. And they may do things, not to get too wonky, but like, they may do things like what's called zero rating, which is basically like they make deals with their services. So they'll offer a streaming service that's kind of like Netflix, except it won't count against your bandwidth cap. Wireless companies are already doing this, right? Where it's like, this service doesn't cost against your bandwidth cap on your smartphone. So there's going to be a lot of weird, sinister jockeying happening in terms of who wants the money, because it's going to be like, your cable company might lose that money. They're going to be trying to get it back some other way. And then some other company is going to come in and see if they can snatch some of that money away. So it's going to be a bloodbath. I had one other question for you about this, which is, I saw a story about, because I'm fascinated by this, if you couldn't tell, I saw a story that was saying that some cable channels were considering lightening the commercial load. And, you know, Fox tried this a while ago with like Dollhouse, and then they kind of gave up. But I had this thought, which is, at some point, if the model changes to the point where really the most important thing is money coming in from subscribers, that I wonder if we're going to get to a point where ads as the driver for a lot of these shows goes away. Because you were saying, like, if you can't guarantee a live +3 audience, but there's a huge audience watching it on all the ancillary channels, at some point, doesn't the model just change and you do something maybe more like Hulu, where you can watch our shows for free with ads, or you can pay and watch them without?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely where it's going, I think, because you can't guarantee that people are going to watch time and place, right? Or time and date. They're not, like, if you have a movie opening on Friday, you can't have a movie ad that people are going to time shift. It's just a waste of money.
Right. But if you stream that ad or you stream that show, like I missed my DVR. Something weird happened with my TiVo data and it didn't record the Flash last week. And so I watched on the CW app. And well, first off, I watched it like a few days later. And the beauty of that is that they can insert that day's ads, right? Because you're watching a day and date for the ads then, right, because they know when you're watching it. And also I got to experience what it's like to not fast forward through ads, which made me want to die.
Yes.
So here's an example where you just totally changes the game if the ads are always whatever is current, but also if you let people just bail out and say, forget it, let me give you more money.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's how you say, let me give you more money so I don't have to watch that ad. We're definitely moving in that area. But yeah, it's going to take smart people. I kind of, the cynicism in me when you said that the bandwidth caps is such dark magic. That is like, because I think a lot of you, I mean, you're a tech guy, you come from the tech world. I can't believe that we're still talking about people who think it's too complicated to change their cable bill, or even deeper down the line, people who still are not streaming. So if we talk about those people, no one is of that group is worried about data caps. Like, that's a concept that they have not come across. They're
sure.
Like, wait, what? Like, that exists as a thing?
But that's what's going to happen, right, is you're going to cancel your TV, you're going to go all streaming, you're going to be watching your 2 hours of TV every night in HD or in 4K down the road, and then you're going to get a cable bill, and Comcast is going to say, well, this is your first month, so we're going to let it slide this time, but you use 2 terabytes of data, and that's going to be another $80 a month. And then they got you again.
They gotcha. And then this whole thing that made me laugh when you were saying about it, this sort of like off-brand nonsense where it's like Comcast or AT&T or somebody's like, hey, we've created Best Flix.
Yeah.
It's our version of Netflix and it doesn't count against your data cap. And it's like user interface is a disaster or whatever. That makes me sad.
Sounds a lot like a cable box, right? It's the internet equivalent of a cable box. It's this kind of like lower quality thing, but it's cheap because they control the internet to your house. And so they can do that.
Well, and again, that's, people have to think outside of the box who are in the business, but just business is definitely changing. I, before I forget, I do want to say one nightmare I had, and I'll never, ever do this again. And I was so livid. I had already had a bad day, so I was grumpy, which is probably not surprising.
It's cranky pants. Wrong.
Right. And I had forgot to tape the Warriors, and I never do that, and I record the Warriors, as it keeps saying tape. But I forgot to record the Warriors. I get back, and it was tolerable. I probably could have, it wasn't even to halftime yet. It was almost to halftime, and I could have just started there, which I should have, and just recorded it. Then I got that little thing saying, oh, you can just double-click on the backwards fast-forward button, or rewind button, and start this program from the beginning. And I was like, oh, the magic. And I've seen that option before. I was like, the magic, let me do that, and I'll just, like, watch it. Little did I know that once you click that sucker, you can't fast forward to the commercials anymore.
That's right.
Oh, and I couldn't get out. That's the problem. I was like, no. Now I want out. I was like a mime in a box. Let me out. I want out of this now. I made a terrible mistake.
Yep, that's how I felt watching The Flash. Yeah,
and I want to get out, and I want to re-record it at the period where I was, where it was almost before halftime. I don't just want to start there again. Nope, no getting out. It was brutal. I had to watch that whole game
where
they would go on these long commercial breaks, and I would just be looking on my phone and looking up stuff on the internet. It was terrible.
It's an interesting idea to think of what if you live in a world where you can pay to get rid of the commercials. I was trying to imagine, like, what is a giant, if the Giants, let's say, we'll just talk baseball for a second, but this could be any sport in any country. What if the Giants say in 10 years, we have a new package, it's Giants TV, and for the season you pay $150 and you get everything and there are no commercials. And it's an all-inclusive thing. It's like, well, that would be interesting because then they could like cover the game during the breaks and have like little cut-ins, and it would be a very different thing if there were no commercials in a baseball game. But I think the reality is that there still would be commercials because there would be a lower tier where you pay less, and you like Hulu does now, and that that seems to be maybe where we're going, is a world, it's a very Max Headroom kind of situation where it's like you will either be able to be forced to watch commercials, no more skipping like you could in the DVR days, or you got to pay us more, which is you know, that's how you solve the problem of TiVos in the world, is you go to a, you know, and in that way advertisers will probably be really happy, right? Because now we've got them where we want them, and now they, if they, unless they pay us, pay the TV networks more, we'll just force feed you ads and you can't stop
and you can't fast forward them.
So that's
I'm a believer of, I mean, and I'm sure everybody who's, you know, in the DVR age, which is most of us, do this. I start all my, I don't start watching anything that I've recorded for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. We watched The Expanse the other night, and we were 15 minutes behind live, and like the last commercial break we had to watch. And as my wife says, live TV sucks.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it does. Really at does. The same time, if you got, if you dispassionately look at the business model, those, I won't say that the ads pay for it, because it's not true, right? My cable bill pays a fee to Comcast, and some of that is for the Sci-Fi Channel, and that's part of the Sci-Fi Channel's business model. But the other part of their business model is that they sell advertising around their shows. And as somebody with a DVR, that is completely lost on me. I am cheating there, because I'm skipping past those commercials. And so I get how that business model is not going to work, because so many people skip over the commercials. I get that. But right now, that's the only option. Would I pay down the road for the ability to just watch these shows? Not even going down the route where I keep seeing the producers live tweeting the show at six, but they've got a West Coast feed on my cable system, so I don't get to watch it until nine. Unlike HBO, which actually drops Game of Thrones the moment it starts to air on the East Coast, they put it on HBO Go. Yeah. Like, if I could pay more to just clear all that stuff out and never have to skip a commercial again, it's just there are no commercials, I would do it. But somebody else is going to look at that price and say, forget it. And they're going to be forced there like, you know, like Clockwork Orange. They're going to have like their eyes propped open, forcing them to watch commercials that they can't skip anymore, which is dark.
It's and the model is changing. I think that I will say, because I don't think we've hit on this part, where the actual model and the infrastructure is changing, that content's not going to change. That's, I've always believed that. Like, people are like, oh, TV's just going to go away. I'm like, no, because somebody still has to make it. No matter where you watch it is changing and how you watch it is changing, but someone's still got to make it, and they have to make it really, really well, because people always say, oh, well, the YouTube gen, this is what I always hear. Oh, the YouTube generation, which has already like come of age, by the way, the YouTube generation doesn't care about quality. They just want to see like snippets of stories, and that's going to,
what's not true.
Wrong in that is that those people grow up.
Yeah, I've seen it in my daughter. I mean, you may have seen it in your kids. My daughter used to be all YouTube. My son is still all YouTube, you know, but my daughter has totally, I mean, she still watches some stuff on YouTube, but she is a Netflix binger now.
Yeah.
And she's asking me for TV recommendations. I have to do that thing of like, what show is kind of like The Office and Parks and Rec that I should watch next? I told her How I Met Your Mother, by the way. And then in like 2 weeks, she watched the entire show. It's amazing how she does it. But, you know, it happened. She graduated and she wanted better, more structured stuff. Now, she doesn't consume it the way we used to consume TV. She is using Netflix to binge it, but she has wanted that extra quality. She's not satisfied by just watching random YouTubers.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is like, that's, I'm hoping to maybe do something on that, if I can sustain a whole column on that, because I think
bet you can.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Because I, you know, there is the perception among people who either don't have kids or have their kids are already grown and they're not of the YouTube generation. And I see that in Hollywood while covering the industry. They're like, oh, this next generation is going to be like this. They're not going to do this. I'm like, you're forgetting that they actually do grow up.
Yeah.
They do not stay that same short attention span theater mind for very long.
I actually think that attention span, good reference, by the way, short attention span theater, Jon Stewart was on that. That was on the Comedy Channel back when I was in college. We talk about the attention span. These kids today, they don't have the attention span. My daughter watches hours on the weekend or when she's sick of Netflix. Like, she just keeps watching. Like, she has an amazing attention span for stuff she likes. It's not, I would say, more than my ability. I am a slow binger, right? More than my ability to stomach it as an adult. And she can just down that stuff. And like I said, 10 years or whatever, How I Met Your Mother in a couple of weeks, just amazing. So I don't think it's true at all. There's a huge appetite and interest, but they want it the way they want it. So that might have to change. But beyond that, you know, there's still, those products are still going to be desired. It's just a matter of how they get marketed, how they're discovered, and what's the business model. Like, who's paying what in order to get that stuff? Like, when my daughter goes out on her own at some point, you know, what's she going to buy? Is it going to be Netflix? Probably. That's probably going to be a brand association, right? That Netflix has spent a lot of money on all this stuff, and you're going to get that generation coming of age and not being able to envision life without Netflix. Let's take a break and then we'll do a few letters. How about that?
Okay,
one more ad. See, we are so popular, we have two ads this week. TV Talk Machine brought to you in part by My Hopscotch again. My daughter's about to drive, so we are actually going to be getting a car, and buying a car is so painful. Last weekend, my wife was saying we should go to a dealership and do a test drive. And you know, literally the bullet point on this My Hopscotch ad read is, just the thought of walking into a dealership is enough to trigger an anxiety attack. Let me tell you, I lived that last Sunday. I had an anxiety attack about the thought of going to a dealership. Like, I just didn't want to do it. And I did some internet research, but the fact is that internet research ends up leading to a high-pressure person on the phone, or a high-pressure person who sends you 10 emails in about a day, or it sends you to a dealership at the end. So here is the solution. It's myhopscotch.com. It's a car buying service that does it all for you. They find the car. They do the negotiations of price, trade-in, financing, warranties. They roll all that together. You can be as involved as you want to be. They'll customize the services for you, but they work for you. They're your representative, so they don't have any conflicts of interest. They're not taking a kickback from somewhere. You can feel like royalty when you walk into the dealership and you just, you know, sign the papers, pick up the keys, and get out of there because you already got the best deal possible. Your agent negotiated it for you. My Hopscotch guarantees you will be thrilled with their service, or 100% of your money will be returned. So you will never buy a car another way. Go to myhopscotch.com and use the promo code TVTalk for an additional 10% off. That's myhopscotch.com with the promo code TVTalk. Two sponsors. No way. Seriously,
look at that.
God, I was like, we just got to go take a walk. And we went and walked the dog because I couldn't think about it anymore, about going to a car dealership. It's just like, no, I can't.
Yeah, it's scary.
Because my car is not, I think, not appropriate for her to learn in. It's getting old. So we're going to get a new car and replace it.
It's a death trap. So, don't let her drive that thing.
Well, you know, the transmission is kind of falling apart, and I know how to drive and she doesn't, so I wouldn't I wouldn't wish it on her.
Yeah, and I think that's how we all feel.
We went a little long with the main topic, so I'm going to save some of these for next time, but just a quick few. Our friend Gerard in Halifax, Nova Scotia, was happy that you recommended the Detectorists, and he wrote in to say, found my gold! That was a good one.
Yeah,
that was really great. Pete in the 619 wrote in to say, that's San Diego, I have one kid and can barely keep up with Wednesday night. The Magicians, The Expanse, the 100, Legion. How do you, Jason and Tim, do it? And your response was, insomnia is the answer. Insomnia.
That's pretty much it. That, and I am getting a check to actually do it.
So yeah, that's true too. That. And I, for me, my world is very narrow, where I've got limited amounts of time where I can watch TV, and it's mostly things that I need to watch for podcasting purposes at this point. But you know, I had to be ruthless in dropping stuff, and that's just, you know, I don't love that, but that's life. Let's see. We got a lot of Legion and Twin Peaks email, which I could summarize. We got John in the 925 sent in a nice note about how he missed Twin Peaks the first time and then just did a watch. It's not even a rewatch. And by the way, Showtime has those all up in HD on the Showtime website, and they look beautiful. I watched the first 15 minutes of the pilot of Twin Peaks last week, and I had forgotten just how intentionally frustrating that show is, like long shots of like a ceiling fan. And just when, and I remember at the time, rewatching it, I was sort of laughing. I'm like, oh, the fan shots. I remember the fan shots. And the shot goes on for like 10 seconds, 15 seconds of watching a ceiling fan from afar. The next shot, it's a close-up of the ceiling fan. It's like, oh my God. Like, it just, David Lynch is just trolling us at every turn. It was pretty great. So anyway, John says, I agree in terms of storytelling. I watched the first 16 episodes of Twin Peaks in 2 weeks and only two of the remaining 14 since then. Yeah, we all know the problem. In 1991, American TV execs hadn't figured out the concept of less is more. Legion is densely packed and compelling. I do disagree, he says, on the aesthetics. I find Legion's look and sound to be uneven. I don't agree, but you know, it's a fair opinion to have. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, perhaps because of the film being used back then, the cinematography of Twin Peaks is stunning. It is perhaps the best looking TV show ever. I'm not 100% on that either, but I do agree. It is a beautiful, scene setting, patient, intentionally frustrating, hypnotic music. There are a lot of things to like about Twin Peaks. In fact, I think one of the things I like about it is that it does play with the audience and kind of say, you're going to watch a ceiling fan for a while. It's brilliant. So, but John, thank you, John, for writing in about Twin Peaks and Legion. That was a fun letter. It is a mind blower to watch that first episode of Twin Peaks. It is from a different world, but mm-hmm. it is finely crafted. I mean, it was released in other parts of the world as a feature film, as a David Lynch film with a different ending. So that it would have an ending instead of being a TV show, and it holds up. And then, you know, and then they had to make a show out of it, and the show is not quite the same, but it's pretty good. Donnie in the 206 wrote in to say that our podcast last week was extremely frustrating. He said, TV in 2017 is big enough to handle two beautifully weird psychedelic shows. I don't understand the need to pit those two shows against each other as if they can't coexist and both be great.
Well, they can, and that was not my point. My point was more along the lines that you can watch both. I will watch both. A lot of people will certainly sample both. My point was, could this be damaging to Twin Peaks as it relates to Showtime and as it relates to as a TV event? Even without Legion, I fully expect there. I hope I'm proven wrong. Showtime hates me already anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I hope I'm proven wrong, but I fully expect that if it doesn't work out and people don't like it, the backlash, regardless of whether there's an option like Legion, the backlash would be like, ugh, we waited for Twin Peaks to come back and it sucked or whatever. If that's that could be the reaction from people. I don't know. But if people don't like it, that's going to be the reaction because there's been so much teasing and buildup and there's so much nostalgia fueled expectation. But my point was, just as a television show, Twin Peaks is not, it's not a narrative device that's really solid. It's a visual device that traffics in weirdness, and Legion is doing that better, and it's doing it faster, and it's doing it now. And so does that impact a show coming up? So I'm not saying you can't watch both. You can definitely do that.
Yeah. And my feeling on it was just that if Twin Peaks is going to, the revival is going to get buzz because it's weird and different. It does compete in the sense that there are other weird shows on TV that are doing a great job, and just being weird is not enough, right? Like if somebody looks at Legion, they may say, well, it kind of pales in comparison to that. They may not, but that's the, I'm not saying they're going to, that's going to be what they try to do in terms of competing. But that just struck me that and Legion aside, like it's just a richer environment now. So it's hard, they have to compete at a higher level than they did on ABC in the 1990s. Right. So,
right.
Alan in the 660. This is one of my nemesis. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Alan.
Alan wrote in to say, when you guys talked about Legion, did you talk about chapter 6? And I believe not. I believe I had seen the first five. I don't know how many of them you saw last week.
Yes, well, we don't want any spoilers, though. But so, is this a spoiler-free letter?
This is a spoiler-free letter, okay. But he will just say his opinion about it, which is, I love the first five episodes, but the sixth really laid an egg. Get on already. We get it. It was clear what was going on, and there was only a little bit of forward momentum at the end. The rest was tap dancing like they had seven episodes of story in an eight-episode order. Now, it will not be a surprise that I disagree with Alan on two levels. One is I feel like I actually learned a lot about the world from chapter six of Legion. It didn't advance the storyline, but what it did do was elaborate on a lot of the world building and the characters and details of like what is really going on in a way that I liked. If what you're looking for is what happens next, yes, it was intentionally frustrating that way. And I can see why people wouldn't like it. I thought it was weird and maybe not, I would say maybe not their most successful episode, maybe their least successful episode, but I still found a lot of it to be brilliant. And I didn't feel like it was playing like a stall tactic to get to the next episode. I felt like it was a pause to do some frustrating of the audience, like Twin Peaks a little bit, and to provide a lot of depth, and that's okay. Like, I'm okay with shows not just always narratively driving forward if they can color in some around the edges that in an interesting way. And I think it was kind of intentional too. But I can see why people would react the way that Alan did. Absolutely. But I liked it. I thought it was still good. It was very different and was doing something very different than previous episodes were. But I really liked it. And I still like I like that show a lot. I have not watched the most recent episode, though. So I'm one behind.
Yes.
But I'm very happy with it. So yes, no spoilers for Legion, but episode six is a little bit of a departure where you feel it, that episode wants you to feel ripped off. Like, have you haven't seen it yet, right?
No, today.
Okay. You go into it and you're like, wait, what? And it's trying to frustrate you. But if you look past that, I think there's a lot there. One more letter. Art from the 425 wrote in.
Okay, Art, let's do it.
Here it is. We're going to wrap it up with this. I agree with your take on Legion. It's bonkers, but if you stick to it and pay attention, you start to get it. Great style, but super acting. Who'd have guessed Dan Stevens would be so good for this role after harumphing it all the way through Downton Abbey? That made me laugh. That's good.
It's such a great breakout performance.
It is.
Apparently he's done what he did, like a horror movie that people really loved or something. I can't remember, but he is delightful in this.
So here it is from Art. My question is this: given the focal point of the show is what's up with David, how many seasons do you think a frenetic show like this has in it? I'm reasonably confident that Noah Hawley didn't take on this property with the attitude of doing a season and seeing what happens, but I wonder if he has a fully planned self-contained arc in mind or whether there's a more open-ended version available. I personally see it as a self-contained shorter run series, but would like your takes. What do you think?
I think it's going to go longer. Yeah, I think he absolutely has an ending or arc. Let's put it that way. An ending is still a ways away. He has an arc. He has a comic book to work off of.
Yeah.
So there's that. He also has the ability to freelance. So there's a lot.
I have been saying about Legion that it doesn't matter if you read the comics at all, because the comics, Legion gets introduced in some issues of the New Mutants that came out like right when I stopped reading comics. And those issues are good, and the character is really interesting. But the character, there's a lot they can do. There's no like definitive Legion story, so he can take the raw material. Noah Hawley can. He can do what he wants with it. So, right, you don't need to have read X-Men comics or know anything about it to watch Legion. In fact, it's probably better. That said, when we talk about where he could go, knowing what I know about the comic book character of Legion, there are so many stories that could be told. The story of him, we're watching him get a handle on who he is, right? Like the fundamental of like, what are his abilities? What are his mental problems? Who are these other people he is talking to? Are they real? Are they imagined? Are they part of him? Are they other personalities? We don't know in the show, like what exactly is going on. Knowing what I know from the comic, I can envision seasons and seasons of exploration of where those initial storylines lead. So I think Noah Hawley probably does have a plan, because he probably looked at all the comic material and came up with a plan of where he could go. Because it really is a pretty rich set of storylines that you can get out of this. And I think he's really patient, right? Like, this season is about exactly what it's about, which is this realization of like who David really is and what the world is really like around him. And then that's just setting the table for where it goes next, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's a visionary. I would never undersell what Noah Hawley is capable of.
Mm-hmm. And one last note from Art from the 425. He says, I watched Travelers based on Jason's recommendation, so chalk up another one. Yeah, all right. Sometimes the low budget Canadian Netflix series work. Sometimes they don't.
Nice.
Okay, that's it. So let me tell people how they can reach us so we can read their letters on a future show. You can tweet at us at TVTM, best Twitter handle on the internet. You can also reach me at Jay Snell, Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or post on the Facebook page like Alan, my nemesis, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And that's it, Tim. Another week done, tight and bright, an hour.
Wow. Yeah, it's when you talk about skinny bundles,
yeah,
things get complicated.
Yeah, that's right. The show gets bigger when the bundles get skinny.
And Twin Peaks, that's a lot to
all right,
to fight with.
Well, everybody just imagine a ceiling fan as we go out.
Nice.
Get yours in the creepy Angelo Badalamenti music in the background as you watch a ceiling fan slowly turn. It doesn't even move fast. That's the thing about the ceiling fan. It's slow. It's slowly moving.
Painful.
Come on, ceiling fan. All right. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Tim, talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.